Hello everyone, welcome to today's episode of Beauty Bosses. I'm Dr. Laura Devkin, I'm a board certified plastic surgeon, founder of Dr. Devkin Scientific Beauty Skincare, and I'm with the amazing, illustrious Laura Brown.
And I'm not a board certified plastic surgeon.
But she's a journalist, writer, published author, and
aging
beauty
girl about town.
Guru, editor, all, you're all the things.
Thanks.
And I'm so happy to get to do this with
you. I know,
you.
Me too.
I have been such a personal, longtime fan of your work. And
my cover's in your waiting room.
Oh,
the
really?
The Jennifer Aniston Insta cover. I mean, it's a bunch of years old now. But I was like, hang on, is that a cover I did like 5 years ago behind the couch?
Oh my gosh, yes.
So, hey.
Well, okay, now that we're talking about that, tell us a little bit about your career. You've worn many hats, and so for the uninitiated, which is probably no one listening to this, can you tell us a little bit about how you became the Laura Brown?
Oh, well, that's good. I like to walk into most rooms and just announce the Laura Brown, just out loud to myself, and people go, wow, we should
it's
put her
nice
away.
That you dropped the That's humble of you.
And I go, VLB. I'm Australian, and I've been in Europe for about 24 years. And I was, for a very long time, I still am in the media, but, you know, I studied print journalism in Australia and then moved to New York with like two bags and a dream right before September 11th, actually, because I wanted to be in fashion publishing. There's a child! Hello! Hello.
And this can sometimes happen when you have six children. Occasionally a child will just appear.
I was so excited. And there's a child. But yes, no, I've been...
You have to
I've
act
been,
cool and...
I'm the opposite. So I've been a journalist, since I graduated from college when I was like 19. So all I wanted to do when I was younger was to be in fashion magazines. And the nexus of fashion magazines at the time... when I moved here in 2001, was New York. And so I picked up and moved here, and it was quite a, calamitous time to move here, but I was lucky, I was fine. And I've been in New York now for almost 24 years, and I, during my magazine career, God, I worked for Talk magazine for like 6 weeks that closed down. Yeah, well, it was a wild ride. Talk, and then W magazine, and then Details, and then I was at Harper's Bazaar for 11 years, and my... last magazine gig was editor-in-chief of InStyle, where I was for about 5.5 years before we all got canned. And it was a couple of, about 2.5 years ago. So, yeah, I mean, I really got to be in magazines, run magazines. It was never the heady days of, like, town cars and martini lunches. But things were really starting to sort of decline a bit, especially when I joined InStyle. But I got to do it. At such a challenging time, to be an editor-in-chief at such a challenging time, it was all the way through COVID, the first Trump administration. It was a really complex time to run a magazine or something, anything
and
communications.
And also that war between print and digital.
Yeah,
well, and like kind of, not the war, but it's been a transition.
Has been a transition. It's so funny. I was always like, yeah. I always saw, like, if you want to read a print magazine, have at it. I do look at things digitally now and but it's like it's all part of the same piece. Like, we would do a cover shoot, and if someone wanted to read a print version of InStyle, great. But I would be following the actress around with a phone, doing silly little videos, and it's all the way that you tell a story. And no, it's interesting. It's interesting now. It's like, because look, it's breaking news. Publishing's in real decline. But what the exciting part of it is, and what I sort of say to people all the time in my little mini TED talk, is like, you are the magazine, you are the magazine, you are the magazine. The media has moved in such a way to the power of the personality or the singular person. So it could be YouTube, Substack, podcasts, like all of these new media ways that people are adopting that is their own brand. So they're not having to attach themselves to some other big platform. They can create their own. So I think it's quite jarring for people who are still attached to what they call legacy media. And they're like, what do you mean all the things I'm used to? They're going away, or laying off people, or they want to save money, and all of the world that I thought was mine is dissolving a bit. But what there is on the opposite side a world for you that is yours and personal. It's not as linear as what it used to be, so it can be a bit scary, but it's super exciting, and it's something that you can really own.
Yeah.
So, you know, but I was lucky because, well, not lucky, but I had kind of enjoyed myself for that with my just being, you know, having a decent profile on social media. So I kind of knew that anything I was going to do after magazines was kind of going to be like LB land, you know, and here we are.
It's so interesting, right? Because ours is the first generation that has been, that's digitally native, but grew up analog. And yeah. we have a lot of responsibility because we have to translate between generations,
yes.
But it's totally different. I see these really popular YouTubers who have, you know, entire nations of people following them.
Literally nations.
Literally. And it's amazing and inspiring. It's interesting. Do you feel like it has democratized media to have so many people being their own journalist and their own platform? Or do you think that it's sort of tilted upside down?
See, you are always such a thoughtful one. No, it's so funny because, look, the minute I think of democracy, I just kind of think of the election. But I would say, yes, the power of the individual, if they're able to create something that is viable and a platform for themselves, that's thrilling in any way, in any position or profession you're in. How American is it? The self-made person, you know, and it's sort of its purest idea why we kind of all live here and why, you know, because there's opportunity for us to create more opportunity for ourselves and bring other people along with us. So I think uncynically, it is democratizing. I think uncynically, it is hugely exciting. Cynically, you know, there's ways that all of this can bend with social media and all of that has been, it is very dangerous.
A blurring of the line between influence and authority. And so everybody is on a level playing field, which can be great on one hand, but on the other hand, what is true and what's not true anymore?
Well, that's where these things shooting around, mistruths and untruths shooting around are by those people owning their own media. That's where the danger is coming in. And that's where, you know, you would try to urge everyone to be responsible because it's exciting and you still communicate your own story and involve people without doing that. But, you know, it's all still so formative. I mean, social media has been around for a while, but all of these other individual platforms, your Substacks and podcasts, are still relatively new. And so, especially like Substacks and all, you know, people being like, I'm launching a Substack, and suddenly they have 300,000 paid followers, and that's like, they make millions of dollars. Like, it's really, you can feel the machine kind of, the gears churning. It's like, which way is this going to be? You know, so it is fascinating.
I think
to be involved
that's so
with.
Fascinating.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's almost like power back to the writer again, which is so interesting about Substack.
No, let me tell you a story. You know, and I think it's, I mean, I, God bless, I didn't have, thankfully, I stopped my Substack because we were writing this book and I was like, hey guys, gotta write a book. But the Substack economy, I think, is brilliant because so many local journalists, digital journalists, lost their jobs. And all of these media layoffs have been going on for years. So what you're able to do is own your own thing and create something. So if you have a story to tell, and if you really stick at it, and that's what it's exhausting with Substack, you've really got to want it because you have to be like, and then Lara and I were walking through the park and a man jumped out of the bush. Paywall. You know, and you want to hear more, we have to pay us money. There's a whole, you've got to really pursue it, but it does give you the opportunity to be your own media company. And that's awesome.
Yeah, it's so interesting. Yeah. And also, I think historically, I feel like some of the most creative writers and journalists were really struggling to get gigs, or they were getting paid per word and things like that.
I'm getting paid like $200 for some big reported story they did for some magazine website that they spent like
$2 And $1 billion corporation is monetizing the clicks on that and it is just so amazing.
They get over it. I'm so glad to see people go like, you know what?
Find a better writer.
Right. Yeah, you know what I mean? I'm being exploited. So and anything in any profession, be it yours, mine, or anything in the middle, I think what's so important is ownership over what you do, what you navigate, what happens to you and with you, and just knowing that it's yours.
What do you think are the most exciting media platforms right now? Like, what, do you think TikTok is going to die? And if so, do you think there will be a replacement? Do you think that we need to lean more into the written word and Substack? Is there an intermediate form?
I've got, so yes. number one, my TikTok experience is literally like, why are they all full screen and yelling at me? So I look at TikTok so briefly, even though I know I will have to exist on this sooner rather than later. But I'm like, they're all big and screaming. So I sort of don't look at that much. But I think what is the most exciting is, at the end of the day, a media consumer or a reader will pay for good stuff, will pay for sophisticated, well-reported, intelligent words. And I think that's behind, and you kind of forget in all of this, I'm doing a dance videos or whatever the hell, makeup tutorials or whatever the stuff is that everyone's looking at all day. There's a purity to it where, for example, the New Yorker is a wildly successful business financially. It's just words and little old cartoons in it, you know, but it's beautiful writing and it's newsy writing. The Atlantic is a massive business now, but the same thing, it's the top quality. And I also follow a bunch, too many. My inbox already, I'm like half a stroke, but like too many media newsletters. There's a million. There's Puck, which, you know, it covers media, fashion, art, politics, with all these different writers. So I'm a real fan of Puck. There's Oliver Darcy has a media newsletter. There's a CNN media. There's all of these newsletters that everyone's... Katie Couric Media. Katie's a great friend of mine. She'd been in traditional media, broadcast media for a long time. And then she was like, hang on, I could do my own thing. And she runs her own company with all of these kind of platforms within it, podcasting and a newsletter and even retail and all that kind of stuff. So it is a kind of personal newsletter universe that I find the most exciting. I still love seeing an incredible fashion image. It's just not as often anymore. And also, I bet it's a bit like you. Like, it's like being a chef and sometimes you don't want to eat the meal that you cooked. Like, sometimes you've got to see like an image that's so...
Yeah, the cobbler's kids have no shoes,
The
right?
cobbler's kids have no shoes. And I have to... Sometimes I can still be gobsmacked by a fashion image, but I know so much of what went into it that I'm a bit like, oh, that's nice, but I'm not as dazzled as I, you know, used to be. That's okay. I still appreciate it. I can still see the magic in it, but, you know, you just remember all the stuff that you had to do to get there.
Do you still see your future in fashion or partially in fashion?
I think I'll always have a... Got proof of life. We're just coming off Fashion Week here in New York, and
how was your Fashion Week?
Limited. I literally say proof of life. I go to like friends events or designers who I know. I went to about, for me, I had to go to 3 events in a night. That was tons.
What? That's busy.
No, it just happened to be one night where 3 things were, and I was like, I'm gonna die. How do I get around? And I went to like 3 or 4 shows. I like it. I always have a toe in the water. I run a creative council for Red, and I've brought in a bunch of designers to collaborate on things to magnify Red's impact, especially right now with the AIDS situation, which is such a mess. And I also am one of the on the board of the Fashion Trust US, which I love, because that is finding young designers and finding ones who are starting out and
the
they're
next
all
generation,
wide-eyed, yeah. And they've got, you know, and they're original and they're enthusiastic, and it's just wonderful to kind of incubate them, actually, to use your words. So no, I always will be in fashion to some extent. I never lived and died for it. I never have. And I think that's been so helpful to me. I think it's helpful to anyone mentally to not go too hard into the fashion business and spend all your money on some jacket and cry if you're not invited to a party and think your thighs are too big. You know what I mean? You can't buy in.
Yeah, there's a way that fashion and beauty, for that matter, can either be self-abnegating and make you feel bad about yourself, or they can be empowering and you can kind of borrow a little bit from all the different parts that make you happy.
But that's not... I mean, look at your business, exactly the same. You know, and you see this all the time, I'm sure, with people that you meet with and treat or see in the media, and it's like, how you can't, it's not healthy to buy in too much, and it's not too healthy to go and go, hey Laura, I just had Botox 2 weeks ago, can I get more, you know all of that sort of stuff. You, it's so unhealthy. So you have to manage yourself all the time, constantly, you know. And I think as you get older, you get your head around it more, but then you face out the different things. But you've got to keep some sort of macro perspective on on all of this stuff, which in the industry that we've both, into some degree, where beauty has a great currency. And so you have to make sure that your currency is greater than that so you can manage all of that coming at you.
What were some of the greatest experiences you've had in the world of media, writing, and editing?
Oh, golly. I really was.
Like some of your good learnings, things that you took away from those.
Oh, worlds. Yeah. I think what I really loved was, look, number one, meeting your heroes and then them being amazing. Like I was able, especially at Harper's Bazaar and InStyle, come with these mad ideas for portfolios or stories. And Glenda Bailey, who was my boss at Bazaar at the time, would go, okay, go for it. And obviously at InStyle, I was able to because I'd be like, oh, what a great idea, said me. And but anything which is you get to work with someone who is super high profile, who you really admire, on a concept or an idea that's really clever and really subversive. Like, that's really my favorite, in a way where they're kind of reconfigured. But I remember very clearly, it was like 2011. And I had this crazy day. This was when, I always say, living in New York, you could have the most insane day where all these incredible things happen to you, and it's only Tuesday. I remember on this Tuesday, I was doing this director's portfolio. We used to get all these high-profile directors and put them in a fashion concept at Harper's Bazaar. And I went to have breakfast with Mike Nichols because I had wanted Mike Nichols, to do this portfolio. And we had this incredible breakfast up at his place on Fifth Avenue. One of, you know, the iconic, I think most of your listeners will know, but it came up as a comic and then became one of the most iconic film directors in history. And we had this, he was so jazzy, and we had this brilliant breakfast, and it was so fun. But that day also involved, so I was nervous to meet him, and then I was going to leave Mike Nichols's house where I'd had breakfast and go to Penn Station to go to Washington, D.C. to interview Hillary Clinton at the State Department. Like, it was just was like, oh, it was such a crazy day. And then I got to, she was the Secretary of State at the time, got to this interview, and I was a bit like, am I going to be dumb? You know, because I just was like, I'm not dumb, but I worked for a fashion magazine. Am I going to? And she'd had, there'd been some micro scandal with some lame thing, and I had to ask about it. And I remember sitting with her in this interview and listening to it back and kind of going out of my body and going, I did good. I knew what I was talking about. And it's that thrill of getting to a point where you kind of meet your heroes, but you can manage. And then you realize that people are just people. And if you get a rhythm with those people, how intoxicating and wonderful that is, and how lovely it is to be able to share with a reader or a listener a bit more of a human side of somebody else as well, and to have that trust. So I feel like one of the great things I gained from all of my years in magazines and relationships that I still have now is trust and familiarity and respect. And I don't take any of that for granted. And I was never, I always just say I'm respectful but not reverent.
That's,
and I think,
great.
That's a big difference. So you're not just like, oh, you know, you're, oh, that's going to be a cute video. Oh.
Yeah, we'll make that.
Yeah, could you
Let's
make
clip
that?
That?
Yeah, thanks. Yeah.
We'll pull that for the social
reel. If you could, yeah, just keep rolling, like, do it on a loop. Yeah.
We can do a sound edit.
Yes,
like
you could.
An
yeah,
ASMR. Laura Brown ASMR.
Yeah.
Well, what advice would you give to somebody who is looking at you as a role model? Because there are so many young men and women out there who aspire to have a career as varied as you, where you can be interviewing America's Sweetheart, a top model, Secretary of State. You could do all of it all at the same time, all in the same day.
Yeah.
And putting it all together and having the visual eye to know what looks good. Mm. I mean, you really have a lot of skills.
Oh,
so
thanks.
What advice would you give to someone who wants to have maybe just one or two of those skills?
No, I think number one, listen to yourself. Really know what's in your DNA. Know what you want, what interests you, and where you're comfortable. A lot of people feel like, I should go and do this profession X or Y, and they just don't feel like themselves. You're never going to succeed if you feel like you're faking it, or you feel like you're overwhelmed or intimidated or just not being yourself. So at the risk of sounding trite, the room you walk into, you have to be yourself. And then when you love that and you're and excited about what you're doing, I gotta say, there's nothing more powerful than enthusiasm. It brings people along with you. So if you're happy to be there and you're like, okay, I'm happy to be here and I know what I'm doing and I'm gonna do the work, that transports you over the years into greater and greater work, and all your achievements become a kind of, like, each thing you achieve becomes like one more brick that you can stand on, you know, and you end up building this big platform that's yours, and it remains yours whether or not your circumstances change, professional circumstances change. So I feel like you just have to, like, kind of underthink it. I always say, like, no one ever goes like, oh, I overthought that and that worked out great. No, I did it. No. I never did. Just, how do I feel myself? What do I feel like I'm versed in? Where do my natural interests go? I should follow them. Try to keep your confidence and not have somebody, you know, push at it. It's harder when you're young. It takes a minute as well. You know what I mean? You're going to have moments where it sucks, you know, and you don't, and or you lose a job, or someone makes you feel shitty, or, you know, whatever it is, you run out of money, or you're not in the cool crowd, or whatever those things that worry you, hopefully mostly when you're younger, but worry people generally. But just remember where your comfort and your love and enthusiasm is, and that's going to set you on your course.
I love that, because there's some extent to which growing up and coming of age professionally or non-professionally is almost like throwing spaghetti at the wall and seeing what's going to stick.
Yeah.
And it doesn't always stick, but sometimes it does. And then you kind of, it's very much a sawtooth pattern of development. And I think that concept of resilience, being able to stay strong and keep those little bricks that you've paved your road with.
Yeah. And remember,
helps you.
And honestly, remember, and I come from a business that does its very best oftentimes, if you let it, to sometimes make you feel lesser, to make you feel you don't have a thing. Fashion is often predicated literally on where you sit at a fashion show or something. So if you kind of look around...
Which is very primitive, by the way.
It so is. Yeah, we're not even like hunting and gathering. I don't even have any food. But you know...
When they assign you seats and they're like, A... C, 1, versus like, you're in Z4, 7.
You have like, you can't see, yes, that's right. But you know, you have to not give most, unless you're at, I don't know, MIT, or most businesses, they're not going to, they shouldn't intellectually overwhelm you. And most, fashion certainly doesn't, you know, there's brilliance in fashion and all of that, but also just you got to remember your own brain, and some certain, in any industry, there's a scene in where people want to network with and everything. Don't let the silly stuff kind of cow you. There's a lot of it, whether it's fashion or a bunch of lawyers or whatever it is, a lot of those games are similar, status games are similar, so don't try not to fall for them, because a lot of it's just a bit silly.
I love that. Yeah. That's so amazing.
I don't know about MIT. I'm sure they get up to hijinks as well.
I'm sure.
I'm sure there's an MIT sorority.
There's a way to get into hijinks at every level and any level. Okay, last question is, I want to ask you a little bit about your future plans and directions.
I thought you were going to say for my face.
Okay, no, we'll talk about that off camera.
That is so funny. I was like, well, yes, go on.
No.
That's so really funny. Amazing. What are you thinking?
What are you thinking?
Yeah.
Tell me everything. What are you doing next? I know you're working on a lot of exciting projects. Some are more shareable than others.
No, I can share. The good thing about being sort of, my profession lately, I call it light bulb lady. I'm just the one that has an idea and we put it out into the culture with whomever I'm working with. But I would say my two biggest babies, my two largest priorities and the things I'm so proud to either be associated with or have created are, number one is RED, which is the AIDS treatment nonprofit that was founded by Bono and Bobby Shriver almost 20 years ago, 20 years ago next year. And they asked me, look, you know, HIV/AIDS, we have the luck here in the US to have ready treatments. And the focus kind of naturally fell away here because it was a given that you could be treated. Of course, there was COVID and that everyone's, you know, people's bandwidth is what it is. And so all of that kind of, so the, sort of the AIDS fight, the global AIDS fight, disappeared in the review a little bit here. And so they asked me to found a creative council. So look, where does global attention come from? Creators, you know, a movie, a pair of shoes, whatever, that kind of thing. Whatever. So it's just my remit is to work on, red. Oh, that dress is cool. Oh, that's for red. Oh, that event was red. And just bringing it all back into the frontal lobe. But I did not know it was going to be vastly important, but it's so urgent now because of the gutting of USAID, which has happened in, I'm not sure when this airs, but the gutting of USAID, which has happened at the end of January. So there are people who normally get ARV, there are folks who suffer from HIV who go get their ARV medication in
antiretroviral.
In Africa, who found
I just have
clinics.
To footnote you. You're so smart and you speak so fast.
Because you're.
You need footnotes.
I know, because.
I was following.
This is great. She's like, oh, can you do this in my life? And there's folks who have HIV who have regularly gone to a clinic to get their ARV meds and have found at the moment the clinic is closed. So this funding is being. The funding still exists, the PEPFAR, which is, you know, what funds this program exists, but at the moment it's all been halted and without any clear direction on when it's going to resume and how. So there's a great urgency in the community of like, what do you mean? We were able to treat this and now the doors are closed, so what do we do? So that's all top of mind. And any USAID primarily, who have been gutted down to about 280 staff from 10,000. Red's remit and the One Campaign's remit has always been that, but there's more urgency on that. So I'm extremely proud and passionate to be of any use, even in my, you know, silly fashion culture ways, for their mission. And the second big baby is a book that I've co-written with Christina O'Neill, who is one of my dear mates and was the editor-in-chief of WSJ magazine, and it's called All the Cool Girls Get Fired. And it's about if you lose your job, it ain't the end, sister. That's basically it. It's again back to ownership, owning what you're worth. Don't attach your value to where you work. Your values in here.
But that concept of resilience is so important. And when the book is out, I'm having you back on.
Oh, do you live reading?
We're gonna do a book club. It's gonna be so cool.
Yeah, no, I think it's going to help. I think it's going to help a lot of women. And I think that sometimes women, by their own design, especially if they lose a job or in any way, sort of go, oh, here's some shame. Let's just carry that around. It's like no one asked them to, so don't.
Yeah.
So we're trying to encourage a cultural change there. I want women to run up to us and they've already sort of started going, I got fired. And we go, you're so cool. I'm cool. So that's at October 14. And we just announced it last week. And so much more to say on that in the fall.
Okay.
But it's super exciting. So yes, I've got, they're my focus and my, hang on, I don't want to get you too excited because I've got a very sexy word of the year. You want to hear what it is?
Yes.
You ready? Should I do an ASMR?
Yes.
Diligent.
Okay.
Wasn't that hot?
That was great.
Be diligent. No, my year is my year of being diligent. I'm like, let's just be diligent and build and not be hurdy-gurdying everywhere.
I love that.
Yeah,
that's
a
like a, that resonates with me. I relate.
Say it with me. Say diligent.
Diligent.
Diligent. That's
hot. Well, where can everyone keep up with your adventures in the meantime?
You can go on the internet, I guess, at LauraBrand99 on Instagram. That's where I can sort of keep most of my bits and bobs, even though at some point we'll have to end up on TikTok, but not yet.
Maybe
not
before
yet.
It's officially banned. You could do your first and last
That'd
post
be kind of
at
funny
the same day.
If I creak my ass onto TikTok and I go, okay, fine, and then they go, beep.
I feel that like would that happen. Would be there would be a poetry in that.
That would happen.
A writerly success.
Yeah, I'd be like, and scene. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. This has been great chatting with you, and you're the best. You're so talented, intelligent, experienced, and an expert in so many different things, like such a polymath that I think anyone in beauty, fashion, or just really thinking about topics would be lucky to have a chat with you like this.
I'm so privileged to talk to you. Such a freaking smarty pants. Well, no, it's just that whenever I'm talking to the camera, I talk to her. She turns the brain on.
I have to keep up.
It's very
I'm just
striking.
Trying to keep up with you.
No, it's very, no, I'm a chest. God, here we go. I was like, let's go.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.